Due to the length of this week's Best of Rain, there will be two ID breaks. This is the Best of Rain for February 9th, 2019. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. This week we bring you another of Hap's fave rain reports, this one from 1990, the first year of the rain report. It's a talk by Dick Helton, W9CTY, a familiar voice for years on Chicago radio, specifically WBBM News Radio 78. This talk was delivered before the North Shore Radio Club in Highland Park, Illinois. Dick was introduced by the late Reese Black, K9TOL.
The speaker that we have this evening is Dick Helton. Afternoon news anchor for WBBM News Radio 78 has been fascinated by radio since childhood and broke into broadcasting in the 60s while studying journalism at the University of Illinois. These days at WBBM News Radio, Helton is known as a versatile professional journalist with an adversity to controversy. His weekday interviews explore subjects ranging from politics to entertainment, and he regularly hosts three of the station's most provocative call-in programs, Ask the Governor, Ask the Mayor, and Talk to the Schools. There's much more here. It tells you all about all his amateur radio, but I'm not going to let you. He sit there, fall asleep on me, and be asleep when he comes up to talk. Mr. Helton.
Thank you. I really do appreciate the opportunity to come here and to meet with all of you tonight. And when Dave Alpert called me several weeks ago asking if I would come and talk to you all tonight, I said, gee, that's terrific. I'd be very happy to do so if it would work into the schedule. And as it turns out, it did. It's rare, being someone on the radio such as myself, that I get an opportunity to actually see the audience. So it's kind of nice for me to be able to do that. When I walked in tonight, Mike Wolf over here, who is apparently quite a listener of WBBM, walked up and he said, gee, you don't look a thing like you sound. And of course, I said, I never did. But it reminds me a little bit of the fact that those of us who are in radio, whether it's in ham radio or if we're in professional radio or whatever, to some extent, we aren't maybe who other people think we are. It's one of the great joys of ham radio, I think, is the fact that you can really sort of be anonymous to that other person. You can open up your personality. You can enjoy who you are. You can enjoy the other people that you're talking with. And yet there's a little shield. Now, the real truth of the matter, of course, comes out when you have meetings like this and when you become involved in clubs. And then you get the opportunity to see this person that you maybe have talked with for quite a period of time. And that person doesn't look anything like you expected. But that's the joy of it, because you know that person. You know that personality. And you know perhaps a great deal more about that individual than you might have known had you met on a face-on-face basis to begin with. I told Dave that I would talk a little bit about ham radio and professional broadcasting and how this all sort of came together for me. And to some extent, my career in broadcasting is a little bit like the old Ted Baxter role on the old Mary Tyler Moore show. It all started at a little 250-watt radio station. In my case, it really began in the basement of our family home down in a little town called Brockton, Illinois, which is about 200 miles south of here, population 300. I graduated in a high school class that had 16 kids in it, as a matter of fact. But my dad had a great joy for listening to shortwave. And when I was a little kid, about 6 years of age, I'd go down into the basement of our home, and he had a Hallicrafters S40B. Now, some of you here will remember an S40B. In fact, some of you here will remember the name Hallicrafters. Be that as it may, that little radio opened up for me a wonderful world of things that went far beyond my little town of Brockton. I could listen to the radio shows that were available through the networks and the various broadcasts that came out of Chicago and New York and other places. But also, I had a chance to listen to people who were in faraway places. And for a kid that was basically a farm kid in a small town in East Central Illinois, that to me was fascinating. And it made me want to know more about who these people were. And we'd tune in to the hams, and we'd listen to them. Of course, it was all AM back then. But we'd listen to these conversations going on between people in New York and Los Angeles, or somebody maybe in New York talking to someone in Europe someplace. And I thought, what a terrific thing this is. I mean, here you have this opportunity to talk to somebody far away and to get to know that person on a one-on-one basis. Well, as it turns out, over a long period of time, I became involved with other things, and my dad had the farming operation going. And when you're farmers, you don't have a lot of time maybe to devote your attention to some of the other things that you would like. But when I was a sophomore in high school, my dad, who had always wanted to get that ham license for himself but had never found the time to do it, came up to me and he said, Dick, I'll make you a proposition. He said, if you study for and you get a ham license, he says, I'll help you build a pretty good ham radio station. Well, I said, okay. I mean, after all, when you're a kid on a farm and the next house is a mile away and it's the dead of winter, you don't have a whole lot to occupy your time. So I checked around a little bit and I found a fellow in a town about 15 miles from me who was a ham. His name was Dick England. His call was K9HQF. And I called him up one night and I introduced myself and I said, I want to become a ham radio operator. Dick said, hey, come on down. I'll teach you everything you need to know. Now, I should tell you a little bit about Dick. Dick was the janitor at the high school in this other little town. He was in his 30s. He was raising a couple of kids on his own. Probably had more things going on in his life just to try to make ends meet on a day-to-day basis than most people that I knew. And yet there was no hesitation whatsoever. He said, come on, I'll teach you. And so in the winter of 1960 into 1961, I spent a lot of time at Dick's house. I'd drive down a couple of nights a week to his home in the winter. Slippery roads, ice, snow. My mother wondered if this, in fact, was all worthwhile for her kid to be out there on the highways having his life threatened with the bad weather. But I assured her that it was. And Dick was the kind of guy that when I walked into his home and I met him, I knew that this was the hobby for me. I wanted to be like him. I wanted to have the kind of warmth that he had to bring me into that fold. I have to tell you a little bit about his radio station. Dick always said he was broadcasting from the throne room. In fact, he was. Dick's station was in the second floor bathroom of his house. And I learned the code, or the Morse code and the theory, sitting on the only other available seat in that room. I may be unique in all the world of having learned the code and the theory sitting on the John, but I did. Finally, it came to that point where he said, I think you're ready. So he called another fellow in another town and said, I've got a kid over here. He's in high school, and I've been teaching him the code and the theory, and I think he's ready, and I want you to give him the exam. Now, back then, as far away as I live from Chicago, I qualified for what was then the conditional exam. Voluntary exams then were the exception, frankly, not the rule. But we went over to this guy's house one night, and there I sat. I mean, this was the moment of truth, and we've all been confronted with that. Your mind turns to mush. Your hand is just about as effective as mush on the key. And you think, what am I doing here? But for some strange, unbelievable reason, I passed this test. And about 6 weeks later, came that little envelope, the little glass window from the FCC. And there I was, W9CTY, conditional license. Never forget it. 16th day of June, 1961.
You're listening to a talk given by Chicago radio broadcaster Dick Helton, W9CTY, to the North Shore Radio Club in Highland Park, Illinois, in 1990. We'll continue Dick's talk in 10 seconds. This is the Best of the Rain Report. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR.
Now, in the middle of June, on a farm, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you're out getting weeds out of the beans and trying to do the corn and whatever. My dad said, we've got to go to Indianapolis. We got to buy some radios. Because he was just as thrilled over this as I was. And so we dropped everything we were doing, and we hopped in the car, took the hired man with us, and drove to Indianapolis, about 100 miles away, and we came home with an HT-37, a Drake 2B receiver, a bunch of copper weld wire, sack full of insulators, a JT-30 mic, and Dick came up, and we began to assemble a ham radio station in my bedroom. And we worked on that for a couple of days. Didn't manage to burn anything up. Popped a couple of fuses. And we got on the air. And I can tell you, as everybody in this room who's a ham radio operator, the thrill of the first contact from my radio station in my bedroom going out to somebody else was unbelievable. The man's name was Shorty. His call was W9IBI. He lived in Mattoon, Illinois, just about 30 miles away. But it could have been Siberia, for all I knew, because it was the most dramatic, wonderful thing that I could imagine. And of course, as you can imagine, the rest of that summer was, ham radio around the clock. And, finally got to the point where I can remember my parents beating on the wall between my bedroom and theirs at about 2 o'clock in the morning saying, my dad used to say, shut that not darn thing off. But he finally got to the point where he grew a little bit tired of ham radio himself. But it was terrific, and it was a proud moment for me. But a prouder moment came for me a few years later when I was in college at the University of Illinois in Champaign. And our home was about 40 miles from Champaign. And I had all this ham radio gear sitting in my bedroom down on the farm, nobody using it. So I called my dad one day from my dorm room, and I said, Dad, I said, here's what we're going to do. I'll give up my college weekends, and I'll come home. I'm going to teach you the theory and the code. I want you to get a license. Well, at that time, my dad was about 44 years old. And he said, then it seemed old. Today, it's nothing. But I said, I'll do this. And he said, let's try it. And so I drove home every weekend, and I taught him theory, and I taught him code. And within 6 months, he had his license. After all those years of having wanted to do that, he had his license. And boy, you talk about starting to build a radio station, we did then. Because we had a lot of room. And we had a lot of places for wire and towers and things like that. And by the time we got all done with it, and some of you who are older in this group will recall some of this gear, we finally had a complete Collins station, including KWM2A, and a 51S1, a 30S1 amplifier. And we also had a Telrex Christmas tree for 2015 and 10 on top of a 200-foot tower. we played radio in a big way. Now, for me, this was the avenue to DX contest. So I became an inveterate DXer. And 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, boy, I was out there. My dad enjoyed rag chewing, and he just developed a terrific amount of number of friends all over the United States. And people that he'd go and visit with, and people who'd come and see us. And I've got a few awards sitting on my walls at home now from some DX contests from CQ and the ARRL, things that I'm very proud of. But the most proud thing, of course, is the ham radio license of my dad. My dad only lived 7 years after he got his license. He died very young at the age of 51. But those, I think, were 7 of the most wonderful years of his life. And it meant a great deal to me to be able to provide that for him. I should tell you, and as you all know, ham radio is a pretty good way to get in trouble, too, especially for a kid. When I was a senior in high school, a couple of my good buddies were hams that lived in a little town about another 10 miles from us. And one of the fellows, whose name was Ron, his dad ran the local funeral home. And they lived in the house next door. And Ron and another pal, Gene, and I would spend weekends. And, we were really the nerds and the geeks of our community. we were the guys that played with the radios and strung wire, and could draw diagrams and circuits and things like that. And everybody else is playing basketball, and doing all sorts of evil things on weekends. At least our mothers told us that's what they were doing. But Ron and Gene and I, we were pretty good at radio. And so I'll never forget, it was a Sunday afternoon. in the middle of summer. And we were working on Ron's rig, and it was an AM rig, and we're trying to get just a little more out of those finals, just tweak it just a little bit more. And we were getting some pretty good results. Well, unbeknownst to us, there was a funeral going on next door. And as I'm told, or I was later told, the preacher had about 100 people in the room, and he was saying something like, you know, I'm sure if Harold could be here with us today, he'd be saying to us, hello, hello, test, hello, 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 test, hello, CQ-75, hello. Apparently the funeral home PA was a damn good receiver. And needless to say, we never played ham radio on funeral days anymore after that. We did take the, after I got married and came to Chicago, actually I got married after I came to Chicago and started working for WBBM radio. I married a beautiful young woman who was a flight attendant for American Airlines. As a matter of fact, this year we'll celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary. She was pretty excited about ham radio too. I mean, she enjoyed this hobby. And I thought she was so excited about it that I had no compunction on our honeymoon of taking the KWM2 along with us. Principally because we were going to the South Pacific. We honeymooned in Australia and New Zealand and wound up in Tahiti. And I got licenses in all three places to operate from. And Janice, in later years, has often told some of her friends that on her honeymoon, she spent more time saying da-da, da-da, instead of ooh-ah, ooh-ah. But that's not true. Although I must tell you that DXing from Tahiti is quite a lot of fun. Later adventures took us to India, where we tried to get the KWM-2 through customs at the New Delhi airport about a week and a half before India went to war with Pakistan. You can imagine the customs inspector's eyes when he opened up that suitcase, and there was this big radio inside with all sorts of wires and cables and things like that. And I knew we were in trouble when he said, well, let me get my supervisor. And the supervisor came over and he said, let me get somebody from the Army. And we spent 3 days going through the Indian bureaucracy trying to get the KWM-2 out of quarantine so that we could actually use it, which we later did. And then took it on to Nepal, up in the Himalayas to Kathmandu, where I have the pleasure of having amateur radio license number 4, this beautifully typed out ham radio license that I have the call sign 9NCTY. Now, for those of you who are DXers, you know that the real prefix is 9N1. I'm sure many of you know 9N1MM, Father Moran over there. He was a terrific fellow, and I'll tell you more about him later. But anyway, I could not convince this man at the Telecommunications Bureau who was typing out this license that it was 9N1CTY. No, 9NCTY, because apparently that's the way it looked on the back of airplanes. So that's what I wound up with. And I spent more time explaining the call sign to people that I was talking to than actually making contacts, but it was a lot of fun.
You're listening to a talk given by Chicago radio broadcaster Dick Helton, W9CTY, to the North Shore Radio Club in Highland Park, Illinois, in 1990. We'll continue Dick's talk in 10 seconds. This is the Best of the Rain Report. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Let me tell you a little bit about Father Moran, because as I saw a lot of nods in here and smiles when I mentioned his name. This is a terrific fellow, and perhaps some of you have had a chance to meet him on a one-on-one basis because he spent some time back here in Chicago. That's where his family is. Janice and I had gone there the first time, and we were staying in this hotel called the Hotel Annapurna. And he came over to meet us for the first time, drove his little VW bug over, and he came into our room, and he looked at the two of us, and he realized, I mean, we didn't have to say anything. He realized we hadn't really been eating real well. I mean, you can only take so much curry over a period of a few days. And he said, you people need some food. And I said, I think you're right. And within a moment, we were in his Volkswagen, going through a gate, knocking on a door at the American ambassador's residence. And she opened up the door, and she said, Father Moran, come in with your friends. And within a matter of minutes, we were eating Vermont ham and Wisconsin cheese and California wine and just having a terrific time. And this is the kind of man this is. So if you have a chance to talk with him and you hear his call on the air, take that opportunity to speak with him. We spent other times in Ecuador and in Thailand and Hong Kong and many, many other places. And I can assure you that doing that and meeting ham radio operators from around the world on that one-on-one basis is just a terrific opportunity. It's really something that brings the spirit of what this hobby is home to you. At WBBM, having been a ham radio operator has been very useful to me because, first of all, it has made me a friend with the technicians. And if you're a pal with the techs, you're in. You want to be their friend. Because if you're not their friend, they can make life miserable for you. Not that anybody at WBBM would ever do that, but the point is that it's good to be their friend. And I know enough technically that I occasionally help them with the gear and stuff like that or make suggestions about perhaps things we can do to improve. I did floor one technician one time, one evening when I was on the air, and he was on the other side of the window running the pots and the knobs and the dials and making sure that the transmitter was up and running okay. And it was 10:30, and it was time to do the station ID, and I said, "You're listening to CBS in Chicago, W9CTY. And I looked up, and he wasn't there anymore. He was on the floor. But I did get some QSL cards. So for a time, I think I was perhaps the most powerful ham radio station in the world. I haven't done that since. I have, on the other hand, had occasions where I've been on the ham radio talking with people and have them recognize me. Occasion occurred when I was talking to a fellow in San Francisco, and he said, "Boy, your voice sounds familiar." And he finally put one and one together and came up with who I was. And as it turns out, this fellow was a pilot for United Airlines and flew into Chicago. And United, occasionally when they fly into the city on one of their audio channels, puts up our radio station so people can listen to the news. And so he had heard me in that case. And on another occasion, I was talking to a fellow out in Kansas, the state of Kansas, who was a Kansas State trooper, and said that he recognized my voice and said that this was back when I was working at night, and he used to listen to our station as he was making his patrols up and down the state of Kansas late at night. So that has been part of the added enjoyment as well. And, you know, in one way or another, we all owe our involvement in this hobby really to somebody else. Somebody who was either willing to kind of take us under our wing and to teach us the code and to teach us the theory. Maybe it's somebody you called up on the phone, or perhaps it was that strange person next door that had these weird antennas in the backyard and who everybody else suspected as being something more or perhaps less than what they really were. And now we all know what it's like to be like that, and who maybe made funny little squiggly lines on your TV set from time to time. But the point was, and is, and does remain, that there are people who want to help. In my case, the person that really wanted to help was my dad, who had that mysterious little radio down in his basement and had those strange little meters, little green meters, and little green windows with funny numbers that I didn't really fully comprehend or understand. But I'll tell you what they are. Those are windows that enrich our lives. Thank you.
And that concludes My Early Days as a Ham, a talk given in 1990 to the North Shore Radio Club in Highland Park, Illinois, just north of Chicago. The speaker was Dick Helton, W9CTY, a familiar voice for years on WBBM News Radio 78 in Chicago, before relocating to KNX News Radio 1070 in Los Angeles later that decade. According to the KNX website, Dick is still broadcasting weekday mornings from 5 to 10. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2019 Rain, all rights reserved. The Rain Report updates on therainreport.com Saturdays. You can catch this hamcast Saturday evenings around 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time on shortwave station WTWW from Lebanon, Tennessee, on 5085 kHz. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 on behalf of the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming!